Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Well, it is great to be here. I'm Elizabeth Alfano in the new WGN Radio Studios, 720. Oh, gosh, we have a great show for you. Sure was fun chatting it up with Andrea Darlis right before I came on air. It's Nightside, as always, from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m., and I am thrilled to be your host tonight. So let me hit up my producer here. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Elizabeth, how's it going?
It's going great. It's great to be back in the studios. I love being here.
Well, the lights look flattering on you. It's really brightening it up.
Oh, how I love my producer. So I don't know if you had a chance to check out the news, but right before I came into the studios, I saw that they're about to jam up 90 and do another protest from anti-violence groups.
Well, it seems the best way to get people's attention, whether it's the media or just people on the freeway.
Well, I don't know what you think about it, but I sort of say, like, power to the people. You know, if you can get them to give you 90 on Labor Day coming in from O'Hare, then, you know, use your voice and go for it.
Well, if the aim is attention, they're certainly getting it. That's for sure. If you can close off even a portion of 90, then that's a bold move. And, you know, if you got a message, that's one way to do it for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's a bold move. And I think people might be muttering some swear words if they're caught in the middle of it all. But the flip side is, you know, change never starts from the top. Change starts from the bottom.
Absolutely.
And so, like I said, power to the people. I'm going to avoid 90 on that day, but I still kind of salute them anyway.
No, I agreed. I think it's it takes a certain amount of moxie. I think that's the best way to describe it.
I like how you roll, moxie. Yeah, that's the word for this. Absolutely. But it is all about change. And so I want to welcome my guest here that I have in studio, because things are changing in the food industry. Tom, have you ever had a plant-based burger?
Plant-based? Well, my brother is really into the plant-based thing. And certainly he cooks plenty of them, but I don't think I've ever tried one.
Oh, you are missing out. Oh, next time I'm in the studio, I am bringing you some plant-based burgers, mister. You are not getting away from
Please
me.
Please do.
So I have a wonderful guest here today, Brad Barbera. He is the Director of Innovation at the Good Food Institute. We're going to learn just all that he does here in a second. But the food world is really changing. And it seems that, you know, now we're talking about plant-based burgers. And of course, we're going to get one for Tom. But soon we're going to be talking about meat from a laboratory. So before I get ahead of myself, Brad, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here, Elizabeth.
And thanks for joining me at 11 p.m. in the wee hours of the night. I appreciate it.
I can't imagine a better way to spend my 11 p.m. hour.
Well, the two of you should get together. You and my producer, Tom. Clearly, you guys have something going on. Very charming, both of you. All right. The Good Food Institute. Brad, tell me what exactly you do there and what the Good Food Institute does.
Well, let's start with the Good Food Institute. We are a nonprofit organization, and we are dedicated to accelerating the transition away from animal products and towards innovative alternatives, in particular, plant-based meat, as you've just mentioned, and clean meat. So we focus on four different things. One is encouraging the innovation in general. So that's working directly with academics and other researchers to develop the technologies. We work with supporting startups. That's where my team in particular really focuses. And we try to provide resources to help them get their company started and get it growing and make it successful in the long run. We have a corporate outreach group that reaches out to those existing organizations that are in this space. Could be grocery stores, could be restaurants, could be manufacturers. And we try to invite them to increase their plant-based outlooks in life. And then our international engagement team. So we want to make sure that everything that is developed is shared across borders so that the world as a whole may benefit. And the reason we're doing all of this is to try to transform the entire food system to be one that is more sustainable, healthy, efficient, and ultimately humane.
All right. So this is my wheelhouse. So you are singing my song. So
excellent.
This really means something to me personally. But I think for a lot of people, Because, of course, I mean, gosh, who can blame everyone? You're working two jobs. You come home from work. You've got two kids. You're trying to get them off to school, trying to get them fed. I mean, who can think about anything else but just getting through the day and not collapsing? So a lot of people don't think about this stuff, and you made a lot of leaps there. I'm wondering if you can explain for people why this is good for the environment.
Absolutely. Well, you've actually touched on one of the founding principles, I guess you'd call it, about the Good Food Institute. And that is, when people are making their food choices, they're primarily worried about taste, price, and convenience at the moment of that choice. So if you ask them when, you know, life is nice and settled, you know, health and the well-being of their families and everything is great, but when you're really stressed out, you know, we need that taste, price, and convenience. And so that's where the Good Food Institute is coming in, to try to help organizations develop these products so that they are just as tasty as the animal-based products. They are conveniently available and they are priced right, so that it just becomes the default decision to do the right thing. Now, how do these products help in, we call it the four harms that we're addressing. And one of them is environmental sustainability. When you look at animal agriculture, it is cited in almost every study you can find about every aspect of environmental damage. And one of the statistics that shocked me when I first heard it was that 40% of greenhouse gas emissions are coming from animal agriculture or attached to animal agriculture in some way. I had no idea. It is greater than all transportation combined. So you put trains, planes, cars, you know, trucks, everything together, and they don't add up to the same amount of greenhouse gas emissions. So also, it's not just global, it's also local. So infecting the water supply and ruining the ground for future development, it's just across the board. So that's one way we are trying to address it, by taking the animal agriculture out of the equation.
And I'm just going to add to that, because I think it's still kind of a leap. Like, you watch a plane go by in the sky and you see that gray line behind it and you're like, yeah, I get it. That's not good for the environment. But you think of cows and pigs and you think, well, I don't get it. So why isn't that good for the environment? So first of all, you have the actual bodily emissions, right?
Exactly.
Yes. The gases in the most basic sense of gas.
Absolutely.
Right? But then you also have all the land that you have to destroy, and I mean chopping down forests, so that you can grow soy and wheat, and then you don't feed it to people. Instead of feeding it to people, you're feeding it to animals.
Exactly.
And so you've just lessened all the trees that actually combat global warming, et cetera, and keep your air clean. You've lessened that for yourself. I mean, I care about animals too, but really we're also talking about ourselves. So
absolutely,
we're not giving ourselves a great chance here if we've taken out all the forests. And then you feed these things, again, not to people, but to animals. And then animals, I understand, to be very inefficient mechanisms of food.
It's an incredibly inefficient process, because animals have to live. And so the calories you're feeding them, the vast majority of that goes to breathing, walking, just keeping the heart beating, whatever it might be. And you take something like a chicken, which is, as far as we know, about the most efficient at converting calorie in to calorie out. And it takes about 9 calories to feed a chicken to get 1 calorie of food out of it. So we liken that to, imagine you have 9 plates of food and you throw 8 of them away and you only have 1 left. That's kind of how this process works.
So, gosh, that's got to be horrible for my wallet. We're going to talk all about that, the financial implications and the inefficiency of that system. Right when we come back, we're going to break. I love this music that Tom has for me. Thanks, Tom. You're a DJ spinner back there. Gotta love it. I have Brad Barbera in the studio with me. Oh, and by the way, I'm Elizabeth Alfano, guest hosting Nightside tonight. Brad Barbera is the Director of Innovation for the Good Food Institute. And if you want to text us, please go right ahead, because I'm trying to make this a group conversation. So you can send in some text to me at 312-981-7200. We stopped before the break saying that, okay, maybe cutting down our forests, to make a lot of grain that we don't feed to people, but we feed to animals, and then animals give us very little back because you're not eating the bones or the blood or the liver or the eyes or the ears or the head. I don't know. People, send me that text if you're eating ears, and we've got a different conversation to have. So you don't get, it's just not efficient. So in the end, one would think that that would make it very expensive. But, of course, there are a lot of subsidies going on for agriculture,
Absolutely.
This kind of agriculture.
Certainly, and that's one of the areas that we like to focus on. And we're trying to ensure that as these companies come on with their plant-based and clean products, they're being able to compete on a level playing field with those that are perhaps subsidized a little bit.
Okay, so you're trying to get subsidies for plants as well. Plant agriculture?
In general, we're just trying to ensure that the companies that are coming in are able to compete effectively and not facing unnecessary obstacles, I'll call it, from government subsidies or policies that restrict their ability to compete.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. How do you do that?
We have a policy department that is second to none. I mean, some absolutely brilliant people, and they are working at both the state and federal levels to ensure that any regulations that are passed are, in fact, fair and just.
Fair and just how we like it. Okay, well, that's great. So we talked a little bit about the environmental impact of animal agriculture, but I also think, obviously, there's the animal impact. I think that sort of goes without saying. But I also think the personal impact, the impact on human health. Maybe you can talk to me a little bit about that. I know, of course, that you're not a doctor, but there's some crazy statistics about antibiotics.
Absolutely. And so the human health aspect hits at both a global level and an individual level. So at the global level, the uses of antibiotics is actually far greater in animal feed than it is for actually treating human disease. So in the U.S., the FDA has said that 80% of all antibiotics used in the U.S. are actually incorporated into animal feed and fed to animals to protect them from disease due to the conditions that they are raised in. So that's a staggering statistic. And the problem there is that it contributes to the development of superbugs that are resistant to these antibiotics. And who knows what kind of diseases may come down the road because of that. And we don't have the ability to fight them because the antibiotics are no longer effective. But also, you have to look at it on the individual level, where plant-based diets have been shown in a wide variety of tests to be healthier, to reduce heart disease, diabetes, all sorts of nutrition-based diseases. So it going this route is good for you both on an individual level and for the population as a whole.
So you just said a couple freaky things there. First of all, if I'm understanding you correctly, and just jump in if I've got this wrong. So the main reason that they're getting so many antibiotics is because they're kept in such filthy conditions?
Basically, it's incredible, and I don't want to disturb the listeners here or focus on the negative, but the antibiotics are necessary to prevent the spread of diseases throughout the flocks that are being raised, yes.
Wow, that's pretty incredible, because I always thought that they had the vaccines just because they wanted to keep everybody healthy, and that made the most sense so that you didn't have ones dying off because that wouldn't be good for the bottom line or whatever. But you're saying that they've got them because the conditions are so disgusting. Well, that is a bummer to hear. But that also, we're not going to be able to combat diseases potentially that could come our way because we just, our bodies have too much of the antibiotics and the vaccines in them, and so the bugs have gotten used to them.
Exactly, and the forecasts are very dire for antibiotic resistance, that it could cost the health system as a whole $100 trillion with a T. That's, which is just a mind-blowing number. And people, more people could die from antibiotic resistant diseases than from cancer. So this is this is something that in the future could be potentially in just an incredibly devastating situation to deal with.
Well, so we're going to have to go to break in news in just a second, but I just want to sort of push back on you a little bit. So when I hear things like this, sometimes I go like, really? Or is this propaganda? Like yeah, really?
This is not GFI statistics. These are coming from organizations like the UN, the FDA, the USDA. I mean, we are just reporting this bad news, I guess.
World Health Organization, Center for Disease Control,
exactly.
Any of these guys in it, too?
Those are
all
the
right.
ones.
All right. Well, we're going to come back, and we've got lots to talk about. Mainly, I want to talk about our wallets, like what this does to our wallets, and what the future of food looks like if we're not looking at animal agriculture. But I must first head to break. Thanks for staying with us, folks. We are getting into it. I'm Elizabeth Alfano, hosting Nightside tonight, and I have with me Brad Barbera, the Director of Innovation from the Good Food Institute. So before we left to break in news, we were talking about, okay, this could, animal agriculture can mean some major health catastrophes for people as we know it, which ultimately means it's bad for your wallet. But what do we do about it?
Well, our contention is that what we need to do is provide alternatives that people are going to naturally want to gravitate to because they taste great, they're convenient, and they are priced in a way that allows them to afford it. And that's where the Good Food Institute is really trying to help startups and help entrepreneurs develop these products and get them into the marketplace where they can start making a difference.
Okay, so I think you're talking about things like plant-based products. So, you know, it's great if we all lived on salads, which I do, and I love, by the way, and sweet potatoes, even better, and avocados, even better. But, you know, if sometimes you just want a burger. Come on, let's be real. And
absolutely.
Sausage and other things. I was telling Andrea Darlis right before we sat down together, Brad, that I make a killer vegan gyros. So you are invited if you ever want my vegan gyros,
because I will be there.
Nail that recipe. But basically, we're talking about plant-based foods. And so I just want to remind everybody, you can hit us up by text, because if you've had a plant-based burger, I want to hear about it and I want to know what you thought. You can hit us up at 312-981-7200. So you're talking about plant-based options and clean meat. So before we get into like Funky Town, which is clean meat, let's talk about plant-based.
Sure.
Options. So, you know, you're just seeing more and more companies pop up. You have the Impossible Burger, which is now, I think it's at White Castle, right?
It is.
Yeah.
And TGI Fridays and all sorts of places.
Okay. I just went to Fat Burger and I ordered an Impossible Burger.
Isn't
and
that great?
It was like surreal to me.
It really is.
And it was great because they were like, they made a loud announcement to the kitchen. They were like, okay, lady wants an Impossible Burger, because they made a specific effort not to cook it on the same grill with the meat.
Wow, that's great.
It was wonderful. And what was even more cool about that, besides the fact that they were like, crazy lady wants an Impossible Burger, was that the guy in front of me, so sort of my exact opposite, he's 25, he's in flip-flops, he's a student, he's in jeans, he's a guy already, so we've got the age difference, the whole thing. He ordered an Impossible Burger too. And I was like, all right, people, this is going to happen. This is, change is a-coming.
Absolutely. And I think the changes, the developments that we're seeing with plant-based foods now are so exciting, because they really are getting to the point where the texture, the flavor, the smell, the ability to cook is all right there, just like people are used to and just like they're craving, but in a plant-based form. And that's just so exciting.
And so sometimes people say to me like, oh God, is it going to be all soy? And I'm saying like, no, it's plant-based protein. So there's proteins that you find in plants. I think we've been so conditioned to think, one, that we need more protein than we need, as I understand it.
Right.
I'm not a doctor. And tomorrow, Dr. Carla Hightower is going to be here with me, and she is a doctor. We're going to talk about some stuff. But I don't think we need as much protein as everybody says. And if you watched the ads on TV, you'd think that vegetables had no sources of protein, and it was only found in meat and dairy. Which,
yeah,
of course, is not right.
Yeah, it's very true. It's a myth. And what we find so exciting about the potential for the future is that less than 10% of the protein sources that can come from plants have even been really worked with yet. So there are so many options out there for future foods that are going to taste great, be priced right, and convenient.
Well, I think that is so awesome that we haven't even tapped the full potential. So I have a podcast here on WGN Radio called Awesome Vegans, and I interviewed CEO of Beyond Meat, Ethan Brown, and it was fascinating to talk to him. They have harnessed a way through vegetables to make a plant-based burger smell like a burger. They've harnessed the senses are through their technology so that you can get from parsley, for example, it smells like a pork chop. And so I never would have thought that's possible.
Yeah, the products they are producing are truly incredible. And I actually, for lunch today, had their hot Italian sausage. The Beyond sausages are utterly incredible.
And off the charts.
The bratwurst, I actually brought home to my parents, who are from Wisconsin. Forgive me, Chicago folks, but they are from Wisconsin. And they tried it, and they were like, wow, this is an actual brat. And yet it is all plant-based pea protein primarily, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful product.
So I'm in the same boat. I threw a party in my backyard, and I was just like, okay, I can't explain to every person what a plant-based sausage is, so I'm just not going to do it. And I just said, you know, okay, I'm grilling stuff up. Who wants what I got? And everybody was like, I'll take that, I'll take that. They didn't even notice. They didn't even notice. It was really, really interesting. Well, okay, so I think most people kind of get, like, there's this thing out there, maybe it looks like a burger, it tastes like sausage, it's gonna feel, taste, smell like it, it's made from plants, probably that's better for me, give or take. Now it's in the same price range, right? Give or take, we're still working on
we're getting there, it's coming down.
Okay, so people can have just started to wrap their minds around this, but then there's this thing called clean meat. So what the heck is that?
So clean meat is basically the food equivalent of clean energy, where it is a real meat. It is actual animal cells. So on the cellular level, it is identical to meat. It's just produced without an animal. And you can produce it in a clean facility that probably looks a little similar to a brewery. And you know, people would be happy to tour around and take a look and actually see how this is produced. It's a wonderful concept. It is still in relatively early development stages, but there have been some significant advances in the technology that make it feel like this is not too far away.
Okay, so I would love to tour. How do I get a tour?
Well, we'll have to have somebody actually launch the product first and set up their tours. I'm hoping that will happen. It's the kind of thing where currently people eat animal-based products in spite of how it's made.
Yeah.
This is the kind of thing where people might eat it because of how it's made, because it doesn't involve animals, because it is clean, no antibiotics, that type of thing. It's just a very exciting opportunity for the future.
So let me see if I can wrap my mind around this. So you take cells from a live animal and you put them in a petri dish or something similar to this?
Actually be more like a large tank that's clean, kind of like you might see at a brewery. And the cells just naturally want to grow and reproduce. And so they're allowed to do so in the tank. They're fed within the tank. And then you collect them. It's more complicated than I'm making it sound, but you collect them, put them into a framework we call a scaffold to give it the form that you want, and then you have a piece of meat just grown without an animal.
So I think at first blush, people might say, like, my meat coming from a laboratory? I don't know. But the flip side to that is, I think, okay, you're getting exactly what you want. You're getting meat. Like, you're not even having to futz with, like, what's in a plant burger or not. You're getting meat, but you didn't chop down any trees. You didn't lose all that land. You didn't. The water it takes for animal agriculture, what a waste. And that's such a limited resource now around the world. It's becoming one. No slaughterhouses.
Right.
Oh,
yeah, dramatically
people.
Less land use, 97% less land use, yes.
Yes, and so less emissions, so obviously, so we save that. And then, you know, we're not really talking about it in today's interview, but you're getting rid of slaughterhouses.
Yes.
What that really translates to, and we're going to head to break here, but what that really translates into is that, you know, if you are eating the regular animal agriculture, so you're taking in a lot of that angst and, you know, these unhappy situations, ultimately we ingest that. So I know there's this kind of yuck factor of meat from a laboratory, but the flip side is, oh my God, You don't have to intake any of the antibiotics. You don't have to get any of the like fright or flight angst that's running through the bloodstream of the animals. You save the environment. It's okay. Is this going to be affordable? Because, baby, I want it.
We are working on that as well. Working very hard to make it affordable. And as far as the yuck factor goes, when you look at any food product that is out there, it always starts in the lab. And we don't talk about like lab-grown Cheerios. You know, they're produced in a manufacturing facility just like these products would be. So it's not not that far-fetched, I don't believe.
And actually, everybody thinks like meat and cheese are natural, but they're pretty processed too.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's lots going in there that, ooh, you wish were not
there. Oh, the things
sure.
I could tell you.
Oh, we could go on all night, people. But we can't because we're going to break. So we're going to head to break, and then I'll be back with Brad Barbera. Oh, my producer's got it going on again. There is Superstition by Stevie Wonder. So is there superstition about clean meat? Tell me, Brad Barbera, Director of Innovation from the Good Food Institute. You think people will go for clean meat?
You know, I absolutely do. And I think when you offer a product that has the right flavor, has the right price, is convenient, it will become the choice. And of course, it will follow an adoption curve. You know, I look back to 40 years ago, Louise Brown was born, and she was the very first test tube baby. And at the time, there was all sorts of uproar. Oh my gosh, this is going to redefine humanity. We don't even know if these people are human. And now, 40 years later, 1.5% of all babies born in the Western world, at least, are IVF babies. We don't think about it. We don't walk down the street and go, I wonder if that person's one of them. You know? And my son is actually one of them. And, you know, I don't think anybody looks twice at him any differently. It's just, it becomes part of what is just the natural way of doing things. And I think eventually clean meat will just follow that same path.
I actually will go one step further. And I think all the couples I know trying to do IVF are so grateful and are so happy that this technology is out there. And I think as people start to think about their children and their grandchildren, they're going to be so grateful that we had a chance to save the planet, and hopefully we'll do it. I know I sound sort of extreme here when I say save the planet, but I don't know. Sometimes I read the newspaper and I'm like, wow, global warming, it's and you know, antibiotic resistance, and we could be in serious trouble.
Exactly. And I think these are wonderful ways to try to make it just a natural choice for people to not have to worry about saving the world when they're eating.
Well, the interesting thing is, so, you know, you and I sort of think this is a great idea, and maybe some other folks do too. But what's shocking to me is that Tyson's and Smithfield also think this is a good idea. So it sounds like meat and dairy are getting with the program. Tell me about that.
It really seems to be. And in fact, just this morning, there was an article about Tom Hayes, CEO of Tyson. And the article ends with him saying, I have to paraphrase, but basically saying, if you can grow meat without the animal, why wouldn't you? And they have really embraced this as a potential source of protein. They've reframed themselves instead of being a meat company as being a protein provider. They've invested in both Beyond Meat and Memphis Meat, so they're hitting both the plant-based and the clean meat sides. And they have a $150 million venture capital sort of thing going on where they're continuing to look at these types of investments. It's very exciting.
I think it is super exciting. So you're absolutely right. Tyson has its venture capital arm here in Chicago.
Exactly.
And it's headed up just by three guys, which is amazing. It's they keep it like super lean and mean. But the boss of it all, if you will, Justin Whitmore, he had this to say, and I'm reading a quote. I can't express enough that we do see a world where there will be multiple types of protein products available. That could include plant-based protein next to pork, next to maybe even lab-grown protein, and customers will have a choice. So I think that's really fascinating to see what's coming on down the line. But so Tyson, business is on board. They're sort of shifting to say, like, wherever the money is, we are. Really, that's their bottom line. And I have to say, I love them for it. So they're like, okay, consumers are looking at something else. Fine, we will too. But who's not on board?
There are some organizations, and I think we started with this whole conversation about change is hard. And there are some people that in a transition like this, maybe personally they're not feeling all that excited about it. And they will definitely try to fight the process as it goes through. But we are definitely trying to work with them. We're trying to get this word out to everybody and engage with them so that we can make this transition as smooth as possible. It is an absolutely necessary transition. We have seen some studies. One recently just said that if the USDA nutrition guidelines were followed by everybody on the planet, we would need another landmass the size of Canada to grow sufficient amount of food. So by definition, right now, we can't feed everybody nutritionally the way we think they should be fed. And then in the next 30 years, we're going to add another 2.5 billion people to the population, potentially. Those are the forecasts. So if we can't feed them all now with proper nutrition, we're certainly not going to be able to do it in 30 years. Something has to give. The system has to change. And we just want to make it change as quickly as possible and as efficiently as possible.
Right. It's just not sustainable. We just can't keep going and just close our eyes and hope for the best. At least that's what it seems like to me. But I know that there's been some scuttlebutt, I'll say, from the Cattlemen's Association. And also, I think it's Missouri that just passed a law that said
that's right.
You can't call plant-based meat meat.
Exactly. This is part of the regulatory battle that is taking place. It has also happened with plant-based milks. And the alleged concern is that it's calling something meat if it's made out of pea protein, for example. It was confusing to consumers. And we have high conviction that it does not, in fact, confuse consumers. We've done research with milk in particular. And if you call something almond milk, people know it comes from almonds. They aren't thinking there's, like, you feed almonds to a cow and it comes out almond milk. You know, so there is not confusion out there. And I think it actually introduces more confusion when you say, well, you can't call it what consumers are already calling it. So we'll see where this all heads.
I think it's very interesting. And ultimately, I think the deciding factor, and you're right, we did start our conversation this way, change comes from the bottom up. And I think you can make those laws and those regulations, but consumers want to feel better.
Yes, they do.
They don't want their future to be in jeopardy. I think a lot of millennials are getting on the bandwagon for a sustainable world, a kinder world. They know what's up with factory farming. They don't want any part of it, and they're voting with their dollars. So I think ultimately the consumers are really going to be the deciding force here. But sort of as a counter to this, what I keep seeing everywhere in the newspaper isn't just that there's plant-based meat and there's clean meat, but that everyone's trying to throw venture capital funds at this. So it seems like the business can't get enough.
Now, there's definitely a lot of exciting work going on with in venture capital, and we get to work, my team in particular, gets to work directly with startups who are out trying to get their companies going, and we see a lot of excitement in investing in them. Two companies, Just, which used to be called Hampton Creek, and Impossible, they've raised over $500 million, just those two companies. So there is a lot of excitement in this area, and I think it's quite justified. The opportunities are huge.
Outstanding. It's so exciting. So I could have this conversation for another 2 hours. I hate to stop you there. I sure do hope you'll come back, Brad, because we've got lots to talk about.
I would love to. There's so much more to say.
Brad Barbera, the Director of Innovation at the Good Food Institute. Thanks for being here, folks. And we're going to head to break and news. We're going into hour two on Nightside. Thanks for joining me, everybody. I'm Elizabeth Alfano, and it is great to be in the new WGN Radio studios. I'm not alone, though. I have someone with me. Alderman Raymond Lopez, thanks for being here tonight.
Good morning, I believe.
Actually, you are right. Thank you for joining me in the wee hours of the morning.
I'm glad we're matching today. Your listeners can't see it, but we're both in green. Yes. So it worked out wonderful.
Yes, we are. Do you have any Irish in you? Absolutely not. Nope.
You know, only on St. Paddy's Day.
So the Mexican and the Sicilian are both wearing green. Somebody explain it to me.
That's how it rolls.
That is how we roll. Absolutely. Well, as I say, Alderman, thanks for being here. I wanted to talk to you about the great work that you've been doing on the proposal to ban horse carriages. Tell me why you got involved and what this ban actually proposes.
Well, the ban on the horse carriages is very simple, actually. The ordinance itself came about because of the activism of many individuals. Your guest, Jody, as a matter of fact, who's joining us, brought this issue to the forefront. And her colleagues have actually maintained it at the forefront at almost every city council meeting, I believe, to ensure that it doesn't lose its luster to my colleagues. And in essence, what this ordinance does, it simply says that we will no longer renew licensing for horse-drawn carriages in the city of Chicago. All the other parts of the current municipal code that deal with regulation, that deal with licensing, deal with all of that, will be stripped from Section 9 of the municipal code. And basically, this archaic industry will be allowed to go by the wayside so that we can actually be truly humane when it comes to horses. You know, being humane is something that I've been a strong proponent of in this city for our cats, dogs, and pets. But so often, as Jody points out, we forget about the animals walking up and down Michigan Avenue, the animals that are in 108-degree heat on asphalt, on grounds that can quite literally cook an egg. They're still pulling people around in traffic through pedestrians, and it's just time for this industry to go.
So I have to say, Alderman, that just makes a whole heck of a lot of sense to me. That just, I'm sort of surprised that in 2018 that we're even talking about this. You rightly mentioned Jody Whitaker, who just kind of walked into the studio here. Hey, Jody, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
So it's great to have you both here, but I want to stay on with the Alderman here for a little while to say, what do you think the success potential is for this to actually pass and for the licenses no longer to be renewed?
Well, obviously, there are some opponents to this ordinance that we're talking about putting an end to the industry of horse carriage in the city of Chicago. But thankfully, with the intense and constant lobbying by the advocates for the horses, both Alderman Brian Hopkins and Alderman Brendan Riley are on the ordinance as championing for it, and they are, I believe, and Jody can correct me, the two wards most predominantly impacted by this industry. But, you know, I say never. For a long time in the city of Chicago, people said we'd never do field returns for animals caught in the neighborhoods, and we just passed that last month, and I believe Animal Care and Control just had their first successful return to owner. And that was something that people said wouldn't happen, it wouldn't be a possibility in the city of Chicago. And here it is. So I have high hopes that this ordinance will pass. Obviously, we have a lot on our plate in the city of Chicago, but we know how to handle big and small, relatively speaking, and I think we'll be able to get this done.
So you think it has a really good chance of going through?
I am highly optimistic that we will be successful in our efforts to see the end of horse carriages in the city of Chicago. Yes.
To me, I'm just so thrilled to hear that, because when I see these animals sitting in traffic and literally just, you know, smoking on fumes there. Obviously, it's not good for people. It's not good for animals. But I see them in traffic and the loud noise, and I just think, like, what's going on here? And I do understand that, you know, it had its place a gazillion years ago, and we just kind of don't see it anymore. You know, it's become so commonplace that you're on Michigan Avenue and you see this thing that was here forever, carriages and a horse. So you're just used to seeing it that we don't really think, well, does this make sense? Does it really help traffic on Michigan Avenue? I think not.
Well, I don't think it helps traffic, obviously. And I think this is a relic of a bygone era. And, you know, most people who know me know that my very first job was working in a horse stable when I was 14 years old in Lockport, Illinois. And you know, I had to take care of the back end, shovel it out in order to get paid, which in that time was being able to ride the horses. And I know what a happy horse looks like from growing up. And just the other day, I was driving through downtown, and I happened to go past a horse that was with the carriage. And, you know, animals are usually alert. Animals are usually excited. And to see a horse that was just trotting along, head down, looking, for lack of a better term, depressed and just, you know...
Sullen.
Is not how they're meant to be. And there are better, more positive ways for residents to interact with horses. There are different ways that you can have that kind of interaction, but this is this should not be one of them.
Shortly, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll be able to talk to Jody some more. And I hope that you'll stick around, Alderman, if you have the time. Depends on your schedule, since we are into midnight now. But I'll just say that, you know, I'm so glad that the two of you and, of course, the other aldermen are bringing this to everyone's attention, because Chicago, I think of as a very animal-loving city. And I think I had on my podcast, I have a podcast here at WGN Radio called Awesome Vegans, and I had on my podcast the Vice President of Farm Protection for Animals, Josh Balk, and he was saying, you know, I never have to ask people to care about animals. Once we give them legislation, they vote for animals. Given the choice, I think Chicago's the same. Given the choice, people care about animals. You just have to give them the opportunity to voice right. that they don't want to see horses anymore, because most people can't work the system and they don't know how to get horses off the street. So the fact that you guys are bringing it to everyone's attention, I think most people are going to agree with you that they just don't want to see this anymore.
We have the amazing ability to legislate compassion, and this is a perfect example of it.
And I love that about our city. Yes. I love that about our city. And you probably both know this. I think it goes for our state as well. So the Animal Legal Defense Fund puts out a list of the best to worst states across the country. Illinois, 10 years in a row, we are the best for animal welfare legislation.
It's exciting.
It is wonderful. And so I think, again, given the opportunity, people care about animals and people vote for animals, and nobody wants to see suffering animals. Right on their pride, you know, their Pearl Pride, Michigan Avenue, you don't want to see abused animals. Gosh. No.
Right.
And just today, Governor Rauner signed a bill, another animal protection bill.
What did he sign?
He signed a bill that will basically stop the trade of elephant and rhinoceros wildlife trafficking of their parts. So it just is another way that shows that, you know, society no longer wants animals abused or exploited.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I love that that happened. I think I saw just at in January of 2018, I think Illinois passed 7 new animal welfare laws. So it's just wonderful.
Including, I think, the banning of the elephants in circuses.
In circuses or traveling acts in the state of Illinois.
And we were the first to do that.
Yes.
We're so out ahead, that which is why it's so weird that we have horse carriages.
Well, and that just shows that horse carriages are the logical next step to get animal exploitation out of the city of Chicago and out of the state of Illinois.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. So we're going to talk about this when we come back, but right now we're taking a break. Thanks for sticking around, folks. It is the wee hours of the morning. I'm Elizabeth Alfano, your host of Nightside here on WGN Radio. I am with Alderman Raymond Lopez, and he has been championing, along with some other aldermen, a proposed ban on horse carriages, which just sounds great to me. And then I also have activist and the program chair and co-founder of Chicago Alliance for Animals, Jody Whitaker, with me.
Hi.
Thanks for coming, Jody. Thanks for making it down to the WGN radio studios.
Definitely.
So I definitely want to talk to you, Jody. We were able to chat a little bit with the alderman about what's going on with horse carriages. But maybe I can get it from your angle as well. So you are the co-founder of the Chicago Alliance for Animals, and I think this is your first endeavor.
Yes, this was our first campaign. We started in 2015, and we decided that we would focus. This would be our first campaign issue. We do, you know, promote a kinder, more compassionate Chicago, and we thought this is something that, you know, with all the dangers and the, we believe, cruelty involved, that it's something that should stop.
So maybe you can talk to me a little bit about that, and Alderman, just hop in whenever you'd like. Talk to me about cruelty. Why do you say cruelty? I think, again, we're all busy. You're on Michigan Avenue. You're running around. You're trying to get your stuff, or maybe cross the street without getting hit. You know, I mean, you're just buzzing through when you're on Michigan Avenue. So you're not really thinking about the horses potentially. They've been there forever, so maybe you don't even see them anymore at this point. What is it that you think is cruel?
Well, beyond the fact that these horses are having to pound pavement all day, work in extreme temperatures, live a very unnatural life. Our group has started documenting violations and basically watching these drivers since late 2016. And we've documented drivers working these horses 12-plus hours. The Chicago's law states they can only work them 6 hours in a 24-hour period. And we've been down there literally for 12 hours from 11 a.m. till about 11 or 12 at night working the same horses. They don't get a break. They're carrying they have the carriage attached to them, the bit in their mouth. They're basically, every movement is restricted. There is no natural movement. There is no walking in pasture or on grass. And we've witnessed this numerous times. We've also witnessed them on many, many occasions being worked when it's been 90 degrees or hotter. Again, Chicago's law states they cannot work, be out working when it's 90 degrees or higher at Northerly Island. Northerly Island is on the lake, so it's got to be a few degrees cooler. Plus, the temperature does not take into consideration humidity, asphalt temperature, or heat index. It's simply the air temperature. These horses are pounding the pavement on asphalt that's been baked with 95 degree temperature sometimes. We have documented them working them on Memorial Day, June 16th, in July, and just a couple weekends ago, out when it was 90 degrees or hotter. We've also witnessed numerous times not having water available. In the winter months, they're supposed to provide a water bucket because in the summer months, they've got fountains to drink from. We've been down there and there's been no water bucket. There's been numerous violations that impact public safety as well, such as drivers being on their cell phones, going through very busy intersections, all sorts of going down streets they're not supposed to be on during busy times. And again, this impacts public safety. So whether you care about horses or not, you should care about the safety of Chicagoans and tourists.
So let me just be devil's advocate here. How can they get away with this? If these are regulations, and Alderman, feel free to chime in. If these are regulations for the city, how is it that they go unnoticed, that there are continual violations?
You know, I think it's a testament to why having advocates paying attention to what's going on, not just with horses, but with anything the city does, is that, you know, we are at a point in our city where a recurring theme that we have is the enforcement operation of the city of Chicago is lacking on multiple levels. And that's something that I've tried to address as alderman locally in the neighborhood, trying to be able to enforce the laws, the quality of life issues in the neighborhood. But at the same time, you know, BACP and other departments also have enforcement issues. And when our budgets are thin and we're trying to advocate, well, we need a horse carriage inspector to basically follow around these individuals to ensure they're following the law, that kind of winds up on the low end of the totem pole in the grand scheme of things in the city of Chicago. So it's very difficult for us to be able to truly enforce what, for all intents and purposes, is good measures to protect the animals. You could have the best laws on the books, but if you're not enforcing them, you're able to get away with abusing the animals. And as you started the segment, you know, we know how difficult it is just as a pedestrian to navigate the Mag Mile, to navigate a lot of these streets. Just stand in front of the water tower and try to cross when you've got everything going on. Now imagine you are an animal several hundred pounds heavier than a human pulling a carriage, which is filled with 3 to 5 individuals.
Or six.
Or maybe 7 if you count the driver. And trying to navigate that. Mm-hmm. You know, we know how difficult it is just on our own. Yeah. And you also, Jody, I think you left out the other latest and greatest obstacle for horses, bicyclists.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Because we all know how law-abiding bicyclists are, just in normal traffic.
And these are 1,000-pound-plus animals mm-hmm. that naturally spook easily. They're prey animals. And that's something that a lot of people do not consider, is that these are animals that can spook. The latest accident in New York City that I know of, the horse spooked because somebody opened an umbrella.
Oh.
That is, you know, a common everyday occurrence. And this, someone opening an umbrella sent about, I don't remember the exact number, but a handful of people to the emergency room.
Oh my gosh.
So you cannot regulate, you cannot prevent a horse from spooking. You know, and the Air and Water Show is this weekend. You've got jets flying over. And if a horse gets spooked, and another law on the books is that the drivers are supposed to be within arm's length of the reins. We witness time and time again the drivers walking completely away from their horses, which means if that horse spooks, he can take off. He could hit a child. He could hit a pedestrian or a biker or a car and could kill someone in a car. We can't regulate that. Even the laws on the books that are not enforced will never be able to regulate a horse's nervous nature.
And my own husband actually reminds me when we talk about this that when he was preteen, about 12 years old, his whole family was doing the horse carriage ride, and you know exactly what you said, a horse carriage in front of him got spooked by the L, freaked, started damaging cars, and you know thankfully nobody got hurt, but in the blink of an eye, just like a car accident, a horse accident is very much a reality.
Yeah.
And unfortunately can be very deadly, because if that horse continues to run, it will run until it's stopped, and God only knows what will happen in its wake.
And who he might
injure,
trample in his wake.
And I want to talk about this when we come back from break, because you guys have picked on a bunch of topics to me that seem like, I can't believe we still have this. So you've talked about having to add people so that they can make sure that the laws are being enforced. That's added money that we have to spend just to make sure that animals aren't being abused. Just take the animals out of the equation. It's all craziness. Okay, we're going to go to break and then we'll be back. We are back. Thanks for sticking with us, everybody. I'm Elizabeth Alfano, and I am in studio with Alderman Raymond Lopez and Chicago Alliance for Animals co-founder Jody Whitaker. So right before break in news, we were saying that this is so unsafe, obviously, for the animals, but also for people. Jody and also Alderman, just chime in. Talk to me about the accidents that have happened.
Well, just today, the headline was 6 people are in the hospital after a horse carriage accident. In Fort Edmonton Park. Again, this didn't happen in Chicago, but that doesn't mean it won't. It also doesn't mean accidents haven't happened in Chicago. In the last month or so, I know of 11 accidents around the world where horses have died, humans have died. A couple of the headlines are from August 5th, woman killed and man seriously injured after accident involving horse-drawn carriage. August 4th, horse pulling carriage collapses in sweltering heat. August 8th, going forward, Corazon horse collapses and dies. August 2nd, man killed after horse-drawn carriage is hit by car. I mean, and this goes on and on. I could just keep reading headlines. They typically happen within, you know, a week's time, or sometimes they, you know, 2 days in a row. There's 2 horses collapsed in the same city within days. You know, at the beginning of the year, there was a woman who her carriage was hit by an SUV, killed her and her horse.
Oh.
So, again, even if you don't care about animals, you should care about humans, and this is an unsafe activity.
And it's unnecessary. I think it's important to note, too, that, you know, some people will use the argument that, well, we haven't had that fatality here.
Right.
Well, you don't have to have a car accident on every block to know you need to wear a seatbelt.
Yeah, and if you can see the accident coming, I mean, do we want to wait till it happens here? I mean,
exactly. Right. You know, and a lot of the cities that have enacted bans are because a horse collapses and dies or someone is killed in their city.
Why wait?
Chicago should not wait for a fatality to end this really archaic activity. You know, and there have been accidents in Chicago. A policeman I know witnessed a horse collapsing in June at the carriage stand, just went down. And I asked him if it was a hot day, and he said, no, it really wasn't even a hot day. He said the horse looked exhausted. And he said it took about 4 to 5 minutes for handlers to get that horse up. I wasn't down there. No media was down there. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen. There are probably plenty of accidents that happen that we are not aware of because no media was present or no advocates were present to videotape it.
It's also something I think it's so unflattering for a city. Again, you are in the jewel of downtown, and here you're parading around unhappy animals. I can't think of anything that gives a more unfavorable impression to tourists. I know some people say, like, oh, well, the tourists really like it, and it's good for tourism. And I think it's actually bad for tourism in Chicago.
I'm sorry. I don't know anybody. And, I used to work in the airline industry, so I've seen plenty of tourists come through my doors at Midway Airport, and I don't remember anyone saying, I'm here for the horse ride.
Right, yeah.
I've never heard that.
Nobody comes to Chicago for horse care drives.
No,
they do not.
I mean, might they take one? Possibly. But they come for the sports, or they come for the theater.
Architecture.
Or food. Yes.
The food festivals.
The music in Grand Park.
So much.
Right. Air and Water Show.
Exactly. And we do educational outreach at least once a month downtown. And we get signatures intended for our Mayor Emanuel. And we talk to a lot of tourists who are like, oh, let me sign that. And they are adamantly against this. And they say, you know, I hate seeing this. And I'm the same way. I love to travel. And I hate seeing horses when I'm in New York or Montreal or any city. And there's plenty of warm climates where I will not travel until horse carriages are banned.
Ah, I love it. I love it that you're sticking to your guns. Because, again, as I said before, Josh Balk, who is the vice president of Farm Animal Protection, who's on my podcast, Awesome Vegans, you know, most people given the chance, they will vote for animals. They do not want to see them suffer. Alderman, can you also talk to me about all the citations that have been given to the companies that have these carriages? And are they paying them? How are they still allowed to have permits when they've all had, you know, many citations?
Well, I think if we could take a step back from that question first. During the break, we were having a discussion of just how many licenses we're talking about. And this is not a pervasive industry. We're talking about, at most, 25 licenses. And from a financial perspective, these licenses only cost $500. So in total, we're looking at $12,000 the city makes for
nothing.
The license. In the grand scheme of a multi-billion dollar budget, $12,000 missing from this industry not existing is not going to break the bank.
Well, in the grand scheme of a huge multi-million dollar lawsuit, should somebody be killed from this? So I would think the city would want to protect themselves in this.
Well, I'm sure to a point we are protected because you still have the operators who are responsible for their animals, good, bad, or ugly. But at the end of the day, too, if someone wanted to be quite intrepid and say, well, you didn't enforce your laws and you were not ensuring the safety and tranquility of the public way through the licensing of these animals, you might be deemed liable as well. That's something that we need to consider. And getting back to the enforcement, we're talking about trying to increase enforcement, again, on an industry that only produces about $12,000 directly to the city. We can argue back and forth about the financial impact of the Magnificent Mile, about the impact that the carriages has as a draw, which I think is negligible. Because most people now can do other things that still involve animals. But at the end of the day, we have to do what's right. And the dollar signs aren't there. The impact, I know it will impact three businesses in particular who operate in the city of Chicago. But we have done remarkable things in terms of being leaders legislatively in this city to say what's right is right. We'll bite, you know, we'll make the tough choices, but we will do what is morally correct for our city, and we've done that time and again. Our business owners took a hit a few years back before I was on city council when we decided to ban single-use plastic bags. We're talking now about banning straws in the city of Chicago. These are things that impact businesses and have, you know, some negative feedback associated with them, but they are also the right things to do because you need to do them. And this is just one more example, thanks to Jody and her team, who, by the way, I love her tattoo that says Animal Liberation. that we can move the needle forward again to make our city more humane and prove once again that we are the best city and state in the country when it comes to animals and their treatment.
Yes, we are such a progressive city when it comes to this kind of stuff. And we are such a city with a heart that I think we just need to get with the program, people, and stop having animals on our Michigan Avenue and get rid of horses banning carriages. We're about to head to break, but Jody, is there anything you wanted to add to what the alderman said?
Well, we have, due to our documentation, these companies have been cited hundreds of times in the last year and a half, and also have been facing upwards of $200,000 worth of fines. All three companies settled with the city regarding those citations and fines. We really don't know what became of that, but the fact is these are companies and drivers breaking the law on a routine basis. We don't want anyone being put out of a job, but if you're going to continue to break the laws of the state and the city, then maybe you should look for another job where you're not going to be breaking the laws and putting people and animals at real risk.
Change your model or change your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Sure makes sense to me. We're going to head to break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what you can do to help.
Generally.
Oh, it goes quickly. Oh, my word. Even at the midnight hour, it goes quickly, doesn't it? It is great to have Alderman Raymond Lopez here and Jody Whitaker of Chicago Alliance for Animals. So right before the break, we were talking about it is just crazy dangerous to have horse-drawn carriages, horse-pulled carriages. And we were looking up on our cell phones, the three of us. So there was an accident in 2014 here in Chicago. And then, Jody, you were saying there was something else involving four children?
Well, the accident in 2014, four children had to be rushed to the emergency room. Now, those four children were okay, but what if they hadn't been? What if one of those, just one of those children had died? I mean, we'd probably have a ban by now. And we always have to remember that these horse carriages, there are no seat belts, there are no airbags, there are no child seats.
No roofs.
There's no, yeah, a lot of times. So anybody can get in these carriages holding an infant. A toddler can get in. In St. Louis, a woman holding an infant had to jump out of the carriage when the horse spooked, and the toddler was stuck in the carriage while the horse took off. There are no safety precautions in these rickety these vehicles that were intended for, you know, two centuries ago.
Wow, crazy. You know, we don't have too much time left, and I do want to talk about a couple things. So right now, this proposal is sitting with Emmy Mitz, and I wonder what it's going to take to get it passed come November.
Well, I think as Chairman Mitz is head of the license committee, she has it in her purview to call it or to wait. I think right now, unless something has changed, I know you mentioned there's 27 other aldermen who've expressed support.
Yep.
But I think officially there's only the three sponsors on it.
There,
unless they've added themselves to the actual.
Alderman Kappelman is a co-sponsor.
So Alderman Hopkins and Alderman Riley.
Yep, and Alderman Tavares told me that she wants to sign on as a co-sponsor.
Okay,
so
good.
So there are a lot of that have told us they are in support. They may not have signed the official co-sponsor form.
And I think that, to your question, what can we do to try and push this forward and encourage Chairman Mitz to call a hearing on it? Would be to have your listeners and their supporters reach out to their local alderman, let their alderman know, make an appointment, is even better in person. You know, I know I usually could listen to a voicemail, but I have no choice but to listen to the person right in front of me, and share their concerns and support for banning this, so that when you meet with them, you can make the ask to, even though the hearing might not be called yet, you can still add your name to it. And then we start to show that the support of more than half the council is there for this change. And importantly, we have to remind people, too, that our downtown aldermen support this. The ones most impacted support this. Right. So now, as you say, you know, we're a city of big hearts. Well, the rest of us, like Alderman Tavares, who's on the southwest side by Midway Airport, I'm sure there are no horse-drawn carriages going down Archer Avenue, but she as well understands the importance of this ban. And there are other aldermen all throughout Chicago. And they just need the opportunity to hear from their constituents that this is important so that we can make the push, so that we can go to the mayor's office and say, this is important. Let's see what we can do to make this happen.
So when I started Nightside Tonight at 11 p.m., my previous guest, we were talking about how change comes from the bottom. It never comes from the top down. It always comes from the bottom up. So we're shouting out to you, people. So call your alderman, make an appointment, get in front of them, take the time, if you can, at the very least, call them, even if you can't get to the office, and tell them that you don't want to see horse-drawn carriages, if that's, in fact, how you feel. And then, of course, I always like to say, it never hurts to do a little social media.
That's right. Yes.
So get on social media, get on Twitter.
Join the Chicago Alliance for Animals.
Join the Chicago Alliance for Animals,
page.
The Facebook page.
Our Twitter is at Chi Animal Rights, CHI Animal Rights. And we do a daily action alert every day where we ask people to reach out to their alderman or to a specific alderman who may not be on board yet, who may not understand the dangers of horse carriage rides. And we have a very active group and a lot of compassion. We're very peaceful. And they can definitely get involved that way.
Yes, and when you're on social media, don't forget to tag the city. Let them know how you feel.
Or come down to city council like Jody and many of her supporters do. Yep. You know, we allow 30 minutes of open testimony on any subject.
You have to be there by 7 a.m.
Good luck, people.
But, you know, we've seen a rise in the number of people who show up and testify. But also, if, as we've seen in previous council meetings, Jody might be speaking, but if she can have 20 people stand up in support
with her
behind her, just for what her testimony shows that people are paying attention, and it has had an impact on other topics, this one should be no different.
And so is this really Emmy Mitz's call as to when she really reviews it? Or I thought it was scheduled to come up in November.
Well, as a matter of process, any ordinance that is introduced gets introduced at a council meeting, as this was, and gets referred to the correct and corresponding committee. Then it is at the chairman's pleasure.
The way the ordinance is written is that the licenses are due to expire in November, so they would not be renewed. So we are actually hoping that it gets on the agenda for a hearing in September, hopefully in September, because we only really have 2 months left before this ordinance would take place if it were passed.
And the good thing about how my colleagues, Alderman Hopkins and Alderman Riley, crafted this ordinance was that most ordinances, they take, 60, 90 days after it's passed and then gets republished. This one is immediate upon, takes effect immediately upon passage. So if it's September or even worse, October, that meeting, if the vote is taken and it's approved by the full city council, it is immediately a law that it will not be renewed. So we have 2 months. It's not as bad as any other ordinance might have been, but it's immediate passage. It's incumbent upon us to get it done.
Yeah,
it's funny because when we sit here and we talk about it, and it seems like there's so much in favor of getting rid of horse-drawn carriages that it's amazing that it's held on as long as it has. So yeah. It's not just that the aldermen want to get behind it and that people want to get behind it, but I understand that there are businesses as well and organizations that want to get behind this ban as
well. Yes, exactly. We have more than 150 businesses that have signed our endorsement pledge. That includes legislators, veterinarians, animal protection organizations, horse rescues, and general businesses, dentists. But any business can sign our endorsement pledge, but it shows, and many of these endorsers have thousands of supporters, if not two of our endorsers have 2.5 million supporters. So this just shows that the majority of society no longer approves of animal exploitation for profit, whether you call it entertainment, tradition, romance. Society wants a more humane society.
We know better. And as Oprah loved to say, once you know better, you do better. And we all know better. So I would agree with you that nobody wants to see animals used for entertainment and that they suffer so that we can be entertained by ball tricks and wearing silly costumes. And even when I see the horses dressed up in these costumes, I just think, oh, shame.
If SeaWorld can make changes with how it deals with animals, we can make changes with how we deal with horses.
So that's another show, people, because I'd like to see some change at SeaWorld for sure. So we are just about to head out. I want to say thank you to Alderman Lopez. I called him at the last minute, and you have so much energy. You just picked up the phone, and you're like, sure, I'll do it. What the heck? I'll roll with the punches. You didn't know how long you could stay, and you stayed for the whole hour.
I have a new story that I did a show at midnight. all the years as Alderman, I've never done a radio show at midnight, so this is a first for me.
You're the midnight rider without a horse. Okay, good for you. Jody Whitaker, she is the co-founder of Chicago Alliance for Animals. Thanks for being here. Thanks for coming down at midnight, too. I really appreciate
it. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Yes, absolutely. So let's tell everybody, how can they find you, Alderman Lopez?
Google's a wonderful thing. Just type in Alderman Raymond Lopez. Come to my website, www.the15thward.org. I represent the southwest side of Chicago's Englewood, West Englewood, Gage Park, Brighton Park, and Back of the Yards. I'm not hard to find.
Awesome. Thank you for all the work you do. Jody, how can we get to the streets and protest for horses?
Yeah, definitely check out Chicago Alliance for Animals on Facebook and at Shy Animal Rights on Twitter. And they can find us there, send us a message, they can join, and they'll find out all the information on our what we do and how we advocate for these horses that have no voice.
It's wonderful to speak up for animals. Thank you both for all that you do. I can't believe that my 2 hours here, your hour with me is already up. I'm Elizabeth Alfano. It sure has been a treat to host Nightside Tonight on WGN Radio. I have a podcast called Awesome Vegans, which is also on WGN, so very fabulous. I will be here again tomorrow night. I have some awesome guests. I have Dr. Carla Hightower and Johnny Juicer. They're going to talk to me in the first hour of Nightside about their health and what has happened to them in their transition into a healthier lifestyle. So I'm really excited about that. And then the second hour of Nightside, I have some plant-based chefs. So we're going to talk to Kitchen 17, is going to be in the house. And Fancy Plants Catering, Kevin Shutter is going to be here as well. So we're going to talk recipes. We're going to talk about, like, how can you stay healthy and have things really taste great and maybe even taste decadent, which is basically how I roll. So I got another great show for you tomorrow night. Thanks for being with me, everybody, and have a great night.